This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The slow leak of Hillary's emails. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Last weekend at all. In August. Here's what's coming up during this hour.
Two more rounds of emails tied to Hillary Clinton's private server have surfaced this week. Why the slow release? We'll examine the different factors.
And the story you won't hear about the glory of winning gold, and that's what can happen when these athletes return home.
For your fantasy football draft, the players to avoid picking because they're prone to injuries.
And why the smallest things you order online sometimes come in boxes that are way too big.
I think every company deals with this, and I've had plenty of people write in since the story ran saying, oh, I this happens to me when I order from Amazon or, clothing stores, everybody. It just shows that nobody's really figured out how to profitably ship every online order.
Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Baskin unfolds an e-commerce mystery later in the hour. The ongoing stories involving the Hillary Clinton email scandal are starting to get confusing. It's understandable, right? The latest rounds came this past Monday, then again Tuesday. USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer has a look at the status of Mrs. Clinton's emails from her private server and the schedule for more releases. Paul, what's the current status?
You know, the problem here, Gordon, is that if I buy you a 5-pound bag of marbles, and then I deliver it to you, and it's still a closed bag of marbles, you would say, thank you very much, and you take the bag.
Right.
The problem is that if I open the bag and then deliver it to you, and you see that it's actually, been retaped shut, and by the way, it only weighs 3 pounds, you're going to ask me, where's the other 2 pounds of marbles? And I'll tell you, oh, well, some of them spilled in my kitchen. And so he's like, well, can I come look at the kitchen? I'm like, sure. And you scoop those up, and then you discover that's only 1 pound of marbles, there's still 1 pound missing. So, and that's basically what we've got here, is that Hillary Clinton's server got opened and some of the marbles spilled out before they were turned over to the State Department. And now what's happening is various bits and pieces of the remaining emails are showing up in a bunch of other places and are going to continue to do so.
So most recently, the FBI has released this batch of about 15,000 and wants them reviewed by the State Department by, I think, September 22nd, right? Explain what those emails are and where they're from. Did we think those were deleted from the server and lost?
It's a little unclear, but yeah. I mean, these came out of the FBI's investigation because the FBI is investigating, obviously, Hillary Clinton's server. You remember that James Comey, the FBI director, had said that they had come across a bunch of damaged emails that may have been attempted to be deleted at various points. And it wasn't clear, and it's still not clear, how many of those are new emails, which is to say emails we have not yet seen or emails that were already handed over or possibly emails that were deleted. Possibly these are some of the personal emails. We just haven't been told exactly what's in this pile, but this pile has been turned over by the FBI to the State Department, and they're going to start, once again, coming out in batches sometime, sounds like, possibly in October, right before the election, which will make it more fun.
We're speaking with Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today. His story is called Why the Clinton Email Story Keeps Drip, Drip, Dripping. Also, we've seen emails that originated from Mrs. Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin, correct?
Right. And now this is where the other batches of marbles are, right? So several watchdog organizations, one called Judicial Watch, one called Citizens United, have filed Freedom of Information Act requests for documents from the State Department. One of those requests was for any sort of State Department-related business being conducted by Huma Abedin, who was Hillary Clinton's top aide, and has, by the way, conducted over a non-state email server. So a batch of those came out. These are, again, not Hillary Clinton's emails. They are Huma Abedin's emails. But within those, it turns out there were some exchanges with Hillary Clinton that had not been previously disclosed. By the same token, I think the Citizens United had a request for emails, official emails, these are now State Department emails, discussing the Clinton Foundation. Well, they got some, and sure enough, there's some that came through the Hillary Clinton server on that stack, too. So you end up with, again, emails are sort of popping up in various places, because, as you know, no email system is a closed system. At some point, you forward your email to me, and now it's in my system.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So presumably, people can keep asking everybody, have you got any Hillary Clinton emails? And there's always a possibility that another one's going to pop up.
Forget about what I said about your editor, too, in that one email. It was a little inappropriate. Yeah, yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the whole question, right? Yeah. We keep waiting for the one to come out that says, hey, by the way, I've stolen a whole lot of money and shoved it in my mattress.
Right.
Haven't seen that yet.
Right. So as you point out, we haven't seen anything criminal, but some of this stuff just doesn't, I think, pass the smell test.
The problem you get into is then it becomes a question of judgment. Is it a judgment of the person reading the email stack? Do these emails show a criminal activity? You know, again, James Comey from the FBI said there was mishandling of classified information, but not enough to bring criminal charges. Now, of course, the Congress wants to know, well, did Hillary Clinton lie about that classified information? Would that be an element for criminal charges? There are now a series of emails showing conversations with donors to the Clinton Foundation. Does that imply a quid pro quo? Were there favors there? Was there improper access there? That's all in the eyes of the observer. We can't yet prove, again, that there is a pile of cash stuffed in the mattress, which is what we'd like to find. Mm.
And is there a predictable end to this?
No. I mean, well, honestly, the predictable end is if there is an election and Hillary Clinton loses, I would suspect most of this would go away because nobody will care anymore. If there's an election and Hillary Clinton wins, then I suspect it will drip, 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 drip throughout the first term of her administration. It's just, people who will have reasons to want to criticize her will find endless reasons to criticize her in the emails.
All right, thanks, Paul. USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer, 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy, and that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Olympic athletes making their way home after the Summer Games in Rio may arrive to a hero's welcome, but what happens once that wears off? John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic, says despite their varying degrees of success, many will have the feeling that life suddenly seems ordinary and experience an emotional crash. John, what did you find?
First of all, there's no official diagnosis post-Olympic syndrome, but I think that the athletes themselves all know what that is, and they all talk about it, in that they reach a high moment, and then after that high moment, of course, the hoopla dies down, and they're not sure what they're going to do, and what the sports psychologists say is that they've spent some at an early point of their lives identifying with the sport, identifying with the outcome of the sport, that when it's over, the identity of who they are aside from the sport has really changed, or in some cases hasn't been developed yet.
Yeah. Well, explain what you found with Allison Schmidt, who we know from rolling up some medals in London 2012 in swimming.
Well, what's interesting with Allison is that she went through all of the things that you and I just discussed, but she was one of the people who was smart enough to actually seek help and to to seek counseling to get her way through it. You know, one of the problems here is that when you're talking about an elite athlete, they're really trained to push through it. You know, whatever adversity they're faced with, you grind through it. And in her case, she realized, you know, this is something that I can't really grind through, that this is a bigger issue that I'm capable of getting through, and she sought help. A lot of athletes, you know, the word depression is kind of the dirty word in the locker room, in those circles, for that very reason, because they've been trained for so long that, you know, you battle your way through it. You're out there alone. Your coach isn't with you. You don't have help. You've got to do it on your own. But, of course, depression is something that's not, you know, easily battled.
We're speaking with John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic. He's got a story there entitled The Dark Side of Going for Gold. You talked about, too, this judo athlete, Taraji Murray Williams, who said, like, when he got home from the Olympics in Beijing, things were, quote, sickeningly mundane. So how do you prep for the return home or cope with some of these feelings if, you know, you're experiencing this post-Olympic letdown?
Yeah, well, you know, what the therapists say to do and what he himself said to do is that when you're preparing for the Olympics before they start, already think about what's going to go on afterwards. Already have a plan in place. Therapists will say, you know, even if it's traveling, no matter what it is, have something in place that you're going to do after the games. And that's what his advice was. He said, you know, he came back, win or lose. He won one year. He didn't do as well the other year. But regardless of what the outcome was, he had the same kind of letdown afterwards. And I think that the idea is that, you know, he had nothing waiting for him when he got back. So the advice that the therapist will give and that he himself gives is, even before the game starts, start having in place some kind of plan.
Yeah, I suspect that's easier said than done. Thanks, John. John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. If your garage has become a dumping ground for Christmas decorations and other stuff that keeps your car on the outside looking in, you're not alone. But join the movement of people taking back that valuable space. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Are you afraid to open your garage door if there's a neighbor nearby? If so, you're not alone. Junk is piling up in our garages for a variety of reasons, and some of us are taking steps to get rid of it. Here with some cleanup strategy is Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, what kinds of stuff is piling up in our garages?
Well, frankly, a little bit of everything. You've got the typical lawn tools and old paint cans, but increasingly people are storing their sports equipment, a lot of furniture, and even memorabilia and family heirlooms.
Do our garages look different today than they would have maybe 20 years ago?
Well, one big difference is they're getting bigger. There is a big increase in cars that can hold three or more, or rather garages that can hold three or more cars. But increasingly, we're seeing that people essentially use their garages as basements and really view that space as a storage for stuff and not necessarily storage for your car.
So the bigger space we have, the more junk we're accumulating.
It appears that way, yes. And for that reason, a lot of companies that are catering to garage organizations say their sales are on the rise because a lot of Americans are getting fed up with the state of their garage.
Ellen, what are these companies like?
Well, there are a number of services that help you clean out your garage and can even help you organize it. And then there's companies like Whirlpool has a whole line of garage organization products like hooks and bins and wall systems that help you get everything off of the floor. But what a lot of people have trouble with in the first place is where to start. And that's where professional organizers come in as well.
Ellen, can you ballpark how much that would cost if you hired one of those companies?
There's a big range. Some charge between $75 and $100. You can get custom-designed organization system. I talked to one consumer who spent $15,000 on organizing her garage.
That sounds a little nutty.
Well, it's a matter of perspective, I guess. There are parts of the U.S. that doesn't have a basement, and if you move there from someplace that does, suddenly you realize you have a lot of stuff with no home. Some people decide to throw away that stuff or give it away or sell it and choose to invest in organization systems.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal about the stuff piling up in our garages. Your story talks about some people who actually kind of make the garage into a living space.
Yes, people are getting creative and realizing that it is another room of their home, and they're turning it into a party space. I talked to one mom who turned it into what she called a lair for her teenage son and his friends, complete with a couch and a big screen TV. I also spoke to a family who decided that they're going to keep it pretty nice, and they use it for their car during the week, but on the weekends when they want to socialize with friends and family, it turns into their party space.
So that kind of changes the entire definition of what a garage is.
Exactly. I mean, there is a lot of creativity going on. And another thing an organizer pointed out to me is that we're realizing that we're just using this valuable space for all of our extra belongings or even junk and storing our really expensive car in the driveway. And so that's opening people's eyes to how to better use this space.
And I would assume that a neat or a good-looking garage would be a good selling point if you put your house on the market.
People are saying that, yes. And the realization that that is often one of the only places into your home that your neighbors see is also adding pressure.
I didn't think about that. It's the Wall Street Journal's Ellen Byron with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. She says, too, in the story, California Closets says sales of its garage products have doubled since 2010, as investing in the garage has become a bigger priority among homeowners. One expert says when clients are moving into a new home, they're even choosing to do their garage ahead of certain furniture purchases and landscaping because they're so starved for storage and organization. For me, it's like a personal challenge to get both cars in the garage. I don't want that clutter, right? If you haven't used it or worn it in 6 months and it's not seasonal, it's time to get rid of it. By the way, if you'd like to hear our weekday version of this program, you can visit our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. You can also check out places like SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. South Florida officials are anxious, and understandably so. A possible cluster of locally transmitted Zika cases in the glitzy resort city of Miami Beach threatens to put a damper on the tourism industry, a powerful economic engine, not only there, but across the state. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Ariane Campo Flores in Miami. Ariane, set the scene.
You know, this is something that folks in the Miami area have been fearing. This is an area, obviously, that's very dependent on the tourist industry, receives millions of visitors. It's a big economic engine. And so when the Zika transmissions were first reported at the end of July, and officials first let us know that there was a zone of active transmission by mosquitoes of the Zika virus, the zone that they centered it on was in the Wynwood neighborhood of Miami, which is this very attractive, very popular arts district. And that's where the attention has really focused over these recent weeks. That is a popular area for tourists. A lot of folks go there, but it is not nearly the level of visitor numbers and revenue that you see out on Miami Beach. And so now our reporting is indicating that Health officials are now investigating a possible cluster of locally transmitted Zika cases on Miami Beach. And so that is certainly going to be a big concern to folks in the tourism industry, because that could begin to, you know, create wariness of travelers, particularly perhaps young women who might not want to come for fear of getting, you know, infected in the area. So there's a potential for it to put a damper on a very vibrant part of the economy here.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Arian Campo Flores in Miami. His piece is called "Spread of Zika Threatens Miami's Image as Tourist Destination." It does seem, at least to a couple of tourists you talk to, they're unfazed, right? Basically saying, listen, you can't stay home because of Zika, but I'm not sure they're young women trying to get pregnant either.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, one of the women I spoke to, you know, she was a mother. She was actually with her daughter in an outdoor cafe when I was speaking to her. She was 46 years old, and so she said, look, I'm not pregnant. I'm not trying to get pregnant, so I'm not worried at all. She said, I'm not going to just, you know, confine myself because of this. I mean, she seemed to have a sort of very, you know, rational, sober view on it. She was wrapping up a month-long trip in Miami. You know, she said she had bug spray. The family, you know, used it whenever they went out, and they were perfectly fine and didn't limit themselves in any way. I also spoke to a younger woman, a 22-year-old woman who was seated with her friend at another outdoor spot. And they, too, seemed pretty much unfazed by it. They said they had used repellent to go on an excursion out to the Everglades, but, you know, they seemed perfectly comfortable outside, you know, with, you know, minimal sort of clothing on, and not bothered about being, you know, potentially bit by mosquitoes. So, you know, if obviously that's the reaction that tourism officials are going to want, and I suspect that that's the attitude that most people will have, because as people learn more about it, they, you know, I think there's an understanding that, you know, for most people, the virus does not produce severe symptoms. They tend to be mild symptoms or no symptoms at all. The real concern is for, you know, women who are pregnant or seeking to become pregnant.
All right. Thanks, Arian. Wall Street Journal reporter Arian Campo Flores in Miami. It's 21 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Here's an e-commerce mystery. Ever wonder why the smallest items you order online come to your door in the biggest of boxes sometimes? Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Baskin has a look at why this happens. Brian, you noticed this personally.
A couple weeks ago, I placed an order on Jet.com, which is a site that's sort of a smaller version of Amazon that was recently acquired by Walmart. And I was just under the free shipping limit, and I ordered a single-serve yogurt cup just to bump me over. And I get most of my items the next day, and then the day after that, I receive the yogurt in a huge box just with every type of packaging you can imagine, ice packs, disposable cooler, bubble wrap. And I decided to get to the bottom of why that happened, which is, I think, a pretty universal experience for anyone who shops online.
Yeah, I think as you pointed out, and as you were guessing or scratching your head when you got the box, I mean, they can't be making money shipping it, you know, $1.69 cup of yogurt and all that bubble wrap and ice packs and stuff.
No, and they were very upfront about that. They didn't try to sugarcoat it. They said, yeah, we lost money sending you that yogurt. And I wouldn't single out Jet here either. I think every company deals with this, and I've had plenty of people write in since the story ran saying, oh, I this happens to me when I order from Amazon or, you know, clothing stores, everybody. You know, it just shows that nobody's really figured out how to profitably ship every online order.
All right, so Jet couldn't get that cup of yogurt, in that initial box that was shipped to your house?
Right, and I think the fact that it needed to be refrigerated was a huge complication for them. You know, everything else I ordered was things like socks and baby wipes and things that you could just kind of throw in a box and not worry about if it rattles around a little or is very, you know, it gets very hot. And the yogurt came from a separate facility where they're testing out grocery deliveries, required different packaging, and, you know, the fact that I had only ordered one thing that needed to be refrigerated made it a very complicated order for them.
Yeah, now there's not software that could say, okay, Brian, we appreciate what you're trying to do here, but you got to order at least 10 of these cups of yogurt to make it worth our while. Right? Is it not something that can do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that they and a lot of retailers are trying to do on their websites. I noticed when I sort of tried to replicate the order a couple weeks later, and now they only sell it in packs of two.
Oh.
So that's a step in that direction. But ultimately, they're trying to create incentives for me to place a large order on Jet.com, and they're not going to try to stand in my way if I try to buy something. They're just going to sort of try to figure out maybe after the fact how to steer me away from doing it again.
Right, right. It's going to be known as the Brian Baskin rule at Jet.com.
they did tell me I'm possibly the only one who's ever ordered just one cup of yogurt from them.
That's funny. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Baskin. He's the editor of the Logistics Report. His story is called Online Shopping Mystery: Why Tiny Items Arrive in Giant Boxes. But on a serious note, though, somebody in your story did say free shipping is unsustainable. So, like, well, what happens kind of from here on out?
Right. That was, I believe, the CEO of Big Lots, and they just started selling items online, and they are pretty pessimistic about the whole enterprise. But I think what's going to happen is, retailers feel like they don't have a choice right now. People expect free shipping, and so even if some of these items ship at a loss, they figure they'd rather, not make a profit on a few orders, but keep the customer. In the long run, we may either see higher prices for some items online, or retailers who can't create efficient operations going out of business.
Thanks, Brian. Brian Baskin from the Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now in front of the hour. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Experience something special at every Lexington Inn and Hotel. With locations throughout North America, you'll enjoy outstanding service and great rates. Visit LexingtonHotels.com. Heisman Trophy winner turned NFL quarterback turned TV analyst Tim Tebow wants to try his hand at something else. This coming Tuesday, he'll hold a workout for Major League Baseball teams. ESPN says more than 20 have agreed to take a look at his skills, which he's been working on for the past year. He played the sport on a full-time basis about 11 years ago, but was a heck of a high school player. Meanwhile, there are lessons to be learned from Tebow about changing careers. Here's MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill. Katie, what are they?
One, I mean, he's lucky, but you first need to shore up your finances before you make the switch, right? So he has enough money to do this. He can afford to make a mistake. If this doesn't work out for him, well, he'll just keep broadcasting, which is what he's been doing for ESPN. This isn't such a big deal for him. Same thing for you. I mean, you don't need to shore up millions of dollars, but you do need to know that you have enough money to try, as you're trying to get a job, as you're trying to build up, the income that you used to have, that you have enough money to kind of make that work for a while.
Mm. I mean, he's got a certain skill set, too, that may translate, right? I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, Heisman Trophy winner, professional football player, so there must be something there. At least,
yeah, no, and he used to play baseball.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting. That was one of my points, too. You got to really assess your skills. He was quite a good baseball player in high school. He went on to play football, of course. But he certainly has, not only is he a good athlete, but he has that specific skill. Whether or not he's, going to make it, who knows. But he has been practicing for about a year. So I think, he does have maybe a better shot than a lot of people do. This isn't a totally crazy jump. And it's the same thing for someone trying to switch careers. Really look at your skill set and think, do I really have this, and can I practice, he's been practicing for a year, but can I work on this for a certain amount of time to really hone this skill? And those were two of my points, exactly what you just said. Put the time in and be honest with yourself about your skills, and it seems like he's really doing that. He's been practicing for a full year in LA and Arizona trying to get ready for this move.
All right, so that physical practicing of baseball for a full year from him would translate to you and I, for example, like, taking an online course, right,
or a class,
seminars.
Doing an internship, even if it's unpaid in your spare time. But, yeah, I mean, those kinds of things where, you know, maybe you don't have a certain skill that this new job is looking for, but you have some other skills. You know, just shoring that up, putting those classes on your resume, putting the internship on your resume, things like that.
We're speaking with MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill. She's got an interesting piece entitled Five Things Tim Tebow Can Teach You About Switching Careers. Well, all right, what else should we note here?
Make a concrete goal and a plan to help you achieve that goal. So he does have a concrete goal. He wants to play on a Major League Baseball team. He's having about 30 teams come watch him practice in a month. So he's like, here's my goal. Here's how I'm going to make it happen. And he's been practicing a year just to reach that point. So that's something we can all learn from, right? I mean, of course, we're not going to maybe play baseball. But, yeah, I mean, he knows exactly what he wants. You need to know exactly what job is your dream job. And then you got to lay out a plan. Okay, well, I'm going to take this class. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And that's how I'm going to get there.
Interesting. And then there's this, as you point out, find credible people to champion you, meaning what?
This I didn't think so, but so Tebow has his agents. He's got other people in the sports world saying, oh, he's really good, blah, blah, blah. For you, you kind of need that too. So if you know somebody inside the company that you're looking to go to, and many of you probably won't, but you got to network. You got to find people who are really in the kinds of jobs that you want or in the positions to hire and you want. Start networking. Go to those events. You know, look at your LinkedIn, your Facebook, and try to find them. But that helps almost as much as anything, right? Somebody from the inside championing you, like, hey, your resume doesn't, you know, it's not like you have 10 years of experience doing this exact job, but I see how this could fit in. This person's really great. Somebody to vouch for you all the time is really essential.
Thanks, Katie. MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. If you're doing your NFL fantasy draft this weekend, here's some guidance. The Wall Street Journal looks at sportsinjurypredictor.com, which has an actuarial approach to assessing risk, basing it primarily on three factors: age, expected usage, and injury history. Last year, the algorithm named Cardinals running back Andre Ellington as the biggest injury risk. He battled injuries all year, made just 3 starts. This year, the numbers suggest fantasy players should steer clear of both Panthers quarterback Cam Newton and Colts QB Andrew Luck, while also passing up star names like Cowboys wideout Dez Bryant, Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, and Redskins tight end Jordan Reed. The safest picks? Quarterback Drew Brees, running back Frank Gore, tight end Antonio Gates, and wide receivers Brandon Marshall and Larry Fitzgerald. Older guys, yes, with a relatively clean injury history. The NFL season, by the way, kicks off Thursday, September 8th. I know it's probably circled on your calendar. Carolina visits Denver. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more from This Morning Show, check us out at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.